I've been doing this broadcast for over 2 decades now, but I can't think of a single time that I've ever come into the studio where I have not been grateful for the opportunity to speak to so many people using the Bible Answer Man broadcast as a platform. But today, I am particularly motivated and excited about the opportunity to put a resource that I've long wanted to have in your hands. It's a resource that codifies exactly what you, as a believer, have given your life to. Randy was just talking about a survey, a Barna survey that examines changes in worldview among Christians over the past 13 years. And quite frankly, it's chilling. Less than half of born-again adults believe in absolute moral truth. A minority of born-agains are convinced that Satan is a real force. Less than one half of all born-again believers reject the notion of earning salvation through their own works. And less than two-thirds of born-again believers believe that Jesus was sinless. It is absolutely astounding that one today can say, "I am born again." Not just born physically, but I am born again spiritually. I have taken on the spotless robes of the righteousness of Jesus Christ, and therefore I will not stand before God dressed in my own filthy robes of self-righteousness, but I will be in the spotless robes of Christ, and therefore I will be accounted as righteous before a just and holy God because of the righteousness of Jesus Christ. Well, I have taken essential Christian doctrine, and I've been thinking about this for a long time. How can I give this to people in such a way that they'll have something that they can put in their purse or pocket that codifies exactly what they have given their lives to? And not just the statement of what you believe, but the statement of why you believe what you believe. And quite frankly, I came upon this idea with my wife, Kathy. We were at a golf tournament that one of my kids was playing in. And we were in the pro shop, and we saw a laminated flip chart that contained the rules of golf. And the rules of golf, quite frankly, can be very daunting. They're detailed. They're difficult to digest. And here in a flip chart format with little illustrations, we had the rules of golf made simple. Easy to reference. You could stick it in your golf bag. If there was a question about what a ruling should be, you could flip it open. You could have a quick answer. And I thought that would be the best way, not just a good way, but the best way in which I could present essential Christian doctrine. And that's precisely what I've done. I've developed a laminated flip chart. It's durable. It's virtually indestructible. Again, you can put it in your pocket or purse, and you can use it as a ready reference for exactly what you have given your life to. These are the very hills upon which the martyrs bled and died. So often we forget about the significance of essential Christian doctrine. These are the hills that the early Christians were willing to die on. They are the very doctrines that form the line of demarcation between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of the cults. In fact, I would say this. They are the North Star by which the course of Christianity is set. Just as the North Star is an unchanging reference point by which sailors safely guided their ships, so essential Christian doctrine has safely guided the church through the doctrinal storms that have sought to sink it. It is, talking about essential Christian doctrine, the foundation on which the very gospel of Jesus Christ rests, from his deity to the eschatological certainty that he will appear a second time to judge the living and the dead. Essential Christian doctrine is foundational to the gospel. All other religions compromise, confuse, contradict essential Christian doctrine. Muslims, they dogmatically denounce the doctrine of Christ's unique deity. They call it the unforgivable sin of shirk. They readily affirm the sinlessness of Christ, but adamantly deny his sacrifice on the cross and his resurrection as the only hope of salvation. So I want you to be able to internalize what you believe. And because I am so focused on that reality, on that outcome, I've organized the main and plain things of Scripture, essential Christian doctrine, around, guess what? The word doctrine. And this may seem simple, but I don't know that this has ever been done before. You can look at essential Christian doctrine in big books. Sometimes they're gathered around 14 principles, sometimes around 9, sometimes around 7. But when have they ever been in a memorable word and the exact word that fits the situation? Doctrine. I've never made my acronyms gratuitous. In other words, they have to fit the bill. And this is exactly what the word doctrine does by God's grace. What is the essential of all essentials? Remember when Jesus came to Caesarea Philippi and he asked his disciples the mother of all questions, "Who do you say that I am?" You know, the Mormons will say, "Well, you are the spirit brother of Lucifer." A Jehovah's Witness will say, "You are the Archangel Michael." A New Thought guru will say, "You are an avatar. You are an enlightened messenger." Jesus, however, answered by saying, "I am God." And as a result, the Jewish leaders tried to kill him, because in calling God his own father, they said Jesus was making himself equal with God. So I start with the deity of Jesus Christ. That's the D in the acronym doctrine. And I end with eschatology. Now look, we can debate the meaning of the millennium, the timing of the tribulation, but we cannot debate this. Jesus Christ is coming again. He said it himself, "Do not be amazed at this. A time is coming when all who are in the graves will come out. Some will rise to live, and some will rise to be eternally condemned." So from the D in doctrine to the E in doctrine, and all the letters in between, you have the very doctrines for which the martyrs shed their blood in memorable format. And added to that, you don't just have a statement of what you believe, but you have a defense for why you believe what you believe. Why is that so important? I'll tell you why it's important, because you have people like Bart Ehrman today, distinguished professor, and he is claiming that Matthew, Mark, and Luke do not have any indication of Jesus Christ claiming that he is indeed God. You can hear him say this in his own words. He's trying to convince his students and now the world that there is no indication in the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, where Jesus claims to be God. Well, as hard as that might be to believe, it's true. And maybe you have to hear it with your own ears. Here's Bart Ehrman in his own voice making that claim.
If the historical Jesus actually went around saying that he was God, it's very hard to believe that Matthew, Mark, and Luke left out that part, you know, as if that part wasn't important to mention. But in fact, they don't mention it. And so this view of the divinity of Jesus on his own lips is found only in our latest gospel, the Gospel of John.
Matthew and Mark leave this out? How can a scholar say something like that? In the future, said Jesus, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. Look, a biblically illiterate person could miss the import of those words. But Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin to whom those words were spoken did not. If ever there was a razor-sharp metaphor, this was it. It cut Caiaphas and the court condemning Christ to the quick. They understood that in saying he was the Son of Man who would come on the clouds of heaven, he was saying, in fact, making an overt reference to his coronation as the Son of Man in Daniel's vision. And in doing so, he was not only claiming to be the pre-existent sovereign of the universe, but prophesying that he would vindicate his claim before the very court that was now condemning him to death. And it's crucial to note that in Daniel's prophecy, the Son of Man is not descending to earth at the end of history, but ascending to heaven. And by combining Daniel's prophecy with David's proclamation in Psalm 110, Jesus was claiming that he would ascend to the throne of Israel's God and share God's very divinity and glory. To students of the Old Testament, this was the height of blasphemy. And so they all condemned him as worthy of death because he, a mere man, claimed to be God. This is not only true in Matthew and Mark, it's true in Luke, and certainly true in the Gospel of John as well. And in this booklet, I give you not only what you believe with respect to the deity of Jesus Christ, but why you believe it, as I do for all the doctrines, D-O-C-T-R-I-N-E. We'll talk more about this on the other side of the break. But look, here's what you need to do. Go to the phone and order this flip chart, 888-7000-CRI, or just go to the web and get it online at equip.org.